Good afternoon, everybody. You have tuned into Paradigm Shifters. This is a bit earlier than we usually start, but I have a special guest today, and she's going to take callers for the next hour and almost an hour and a half. Her name is Linda Sherman. Welcome to the show, Linda.
Well, thank you, Veronica. It's wonderful to be on your show.
I'm excited about your book, which is called What Next? A Survival Guide to the 21st Century. And as a lot of you listening to this show have already read in our little flyers and so on, Linda has made some incredible, very intuitive, but really brilliant, what would we call it, descriptions of where the planets are and have been through various major times in history. And I was just reading in one of these Huffington Post blogs that you wrote. This was on September 1st, 2007. 2007, that's over a year ago, and you were saying that, and I don't know what the configuration is, but in any case, you were saying there will be banks that become insolvent. How many can the feds bail out? Will the struggling taxpayer of the steadily declining middle class have to bail out entities who have made hundreds of millions of dollars and who have benefited from President Bush's tax breaks? That's sort of interesting because that was written a year and something ago. That's pretty predictive stuff you've got going here, girl.
Yes, I have had a very much of a passion about using astrology as sort of the key to unlock the future, not in terms of absolutes or, you know, saying that this one thing is going to happen, but it unlocks the key as to what the themes, issues, and challenges that are going to be before us, that are before us now and that will be ahead of us. And that gives me, in a sense, unlocks the door as to what to look for. When I wrote my book, What Next?, which took me almost 4 years to write, I was looking at the positions of the planets ahead, and then before me lay the big landscape of research.
Oh.
to see, was there really substance? Were there really things happening in our government and in the world of finance to substantiate possibly the presentation of a very great and lengthy economic depression, climate crisis and breakdown, and transformation in human consciousness as a necessity.
And all of it coming toward 2012, which we know is everybody's thinking it's the end of things anyway.
Yes, well, I think that we have to distinguish that there is a tendency for us to think the end is nigh. You know, those people walking around with signs with long beards saying the end is nigh.
If we're smart, we're always at the beginning anyway, so here we go.
Yes, exactly. There's a tendency for us to think, boy, this is going to be the end of the world. And my feeling is there's been many times that the world that people have been familiar with has ended. My take on this is that it is time for the world as we have been experiencing it to come to an end. Because what this, to me, is about is the end of very great and grand cycles. In 2012, there's the end of the Mayan epoch, which is 51 to 5200 years. It's close to the end of the age of Pisces, which is about 2100 years. And even more significantly, it is the where the winter solstice hits the center of the galaxy every 26,000 years.
Oh,
and
wow.
All of those grand cycles are presenting themselves as the end of our way of life. But it does not necessarily mean that that's the end of our lives, the end of the world. It means that we have to be transformed. We have to change our footprint on this planet. We can
rapidly.
No longer just massively consume, using up energy, using up water, using up farmland and food indiscriminately in a system that encourages mass consumption and usage. We have to transform our way of life. And in my book, What Next?, after I point out what I feel is ahead of us, beginning with this economic collapse.
Which you really did predict, actually.
Yes, I predicted it many, many times on my website, which is www.soothsayer.com. I've made these predictions. I have a monthly newsletter that's free to the public. At the first of every month, in my book and in the Huffington Post blog articles, I have made these predictions that based on astrology, but also based on fact finding. It just seemed to me to be obvious that the plutocrats, the global capitalists, were going to once again, as they did in 1929, 1930, bring down the financial system and then blame it on everybody else as they threw themselves out of the window.
Are you a financial wizard? I mean, you were a student of finances before?
It's interesting. I could say easily I have not been a student of economics and finance. My oldest daughter has her PhD in economics and finance.
Wow.
And her husband as well. They're professors of economics at a college in Pennsylvania. And I had to really avail myself of an enormous amount of information in order to be competent to even understand the language. I read many, many, many wonderful newsletters over the internet and books on finance and long treatises by economists. To try to comprehend, and even then I can't say that I have an in-depth, thorough comprehension of the financial world, but then neither does anyone else.
Your book is actually so readable. I thought I was going to be overwhelmed because it's mostly very economical and like huge impulses of society's collective or some aspects of it, but it's very easy to read. And very, very gripping.
Veronica, I'm so happy to hear you say that, because that was my objective, to take extremely complicated subjects and turn them into something that was comprehensible to people. I wrote this book not for astrologers, but for the public at large, to warn them to position themselves in certain ways so that the things ahead would be less stressful and less catastrophic for them. And also, and these things, for instance, we all know about the subprime fiasco and the massive, massive foreclosures, and this is far from being over. The irresponsible lending to people who really didn't even read their mortgage contracts. But I ask you, how many mortgage contracts at closings have you read?
Only parts of them, usually.
Right. You know, they tell you something, you believe them, you sign it, you think you're buying a house, etc. But I feel that there's a couple of more major, major shoes to drop on that cold floor. One of them is municipal bonds. Municipal bonds are at the heart of financing infrastructure. Other than property tax, they're the major source of repairing highways and water systems and electrical systems and everything else that has to do with our cities, our communities, our highways, our fire department, our police department, etc. And these are in serious trouble. the entities called monolines that insure the municipal bond market used as collateral for their solvency, the subprime mortgages, which were sold off indiscriminately to hedge funds and all kinds of entities called structured investment vehicles. And to the point where a bunch of mortgages wound up in somebody's hedge fund somewhere, and no one even knows who owns the house when it forecloses. This is how bad. Well, at any rate, these insurance companies got high ratings by Standards and Poor's and everything, whose reputations are now down the toilet, by the way. And these municipal bonds, now the question is, are they going to represent solvency? How many people bought municipal bonds that are tax-free as a conservative play in their portfolio?
Yeah, because they sound really solid.
Yes, they were always very, very solid. And now they may be in serious trouble. But the worst is yet to come. The big deal is the derivatives market. Derivatives, as I explained in my book, are very, very complicated, and I have to say that the simplest way to explain them is that they're people who buy bets. Instead of your buying, for instance, a stock, say in General Electric, you buy some stock or whatever, or buying a bond or buying something directly, a derivative is basically buying a bet. You buy a bet that something will go up or down, a stock, a commodity, et cetera, et cetera.
So it has no substance of itself.
Yes, and many of these derivative contracts, by the way, are so like credit derivative swaps, which were supposed to be insurance on other derivatives that might not be right. These instruments, which, by the way, Alan Greenspan greatly encouraged, in addition to the extremely low interest rates for mortgages and let's give more mortgages that he encouraged this derivatives market. Now, normally there's a place for these. Historically, people who used to trade commodities futures, which is a type of derivative, a farmer, if he was raising soybeans, let's say, a farmer, and he thought, well, you know, I don't know whether the weather is going to wipe out my crop or not this year, he would buy a bet that soybeans would go down or the crops would fail, and if his crop failed, he didn't lose everything, you see. He was able to bet against himself as a kind of hedge.
Like an insurance.
Yes, exactly. This derivatives had their place in the scheme of things. You could make money on whether something went down as well as whether something. You could buy a call betting it would go up or a put betting that it would go down. And I'm simplifying things that are very, very complex, I wish to say. What has happened in the past several years, I'd say, is that the derivatives market globally has ballooned and skyrocketed into the biggest bubble of all time. The Bank of International Settlements last May published a notional global derivatives value of, hold on to your seat, $596 trillion.
Oh, my.
This is something like 10, 12 times the gross domestic product of all nations on Earth.
Wow.
In these risky, highly risky contracts. And this does not count what they call the OTCs, or the over-the-counter derivatives market, which are unregulated and virtually unknown. In other words, they're just betting. If you can get somebody to bet against you, you can buy a bet on these. And this is what Warren Buffett called in 2003 publicly in the New York Times. He called it the financial weapon of mass destruction.
Uh-huh.
And Warren Buffett is a man to be admired. He never got into this arena. He's made money the old-fashioned way by buying stocks and investments and things he thinks has a long-term value. He's basically an upfront, honest person. And he warned us against it. This is a part of the global gambling that has been going on in the past 8 years.
What's the configuration? Can you tell us an astrological configuration that might imply that this would come on?
Yes, I can, for those astrologers that are out there. Transiting Pluto from 1995 to the present, it is about to change signs by November 27th of this year, has been in the sign of Sagittarius. Sagittarius is a sign that has been consistently associated with bull markets and giant bubbles and extremes of speculation, extremes of investing, extreme optimism over the top, almost like a gambler's optimism when he goes to the table. Pluto in Sagittarius has really been the lead-off planet, in my estimation.
But Pluto is about authenticity, isn't it? Sort of like the smashing of the Sagittarian dream, is that it?
Ultimately, that's what Pluto does. Pluto is a planet that symbolizes death and rebirth. It's a planet that symbolizes whatever sign it goes into, there's an intensity associated with it, and there's a mass consciousness movement associated with it. Of all the planets, the masses tend to go in the direction that Pluto is going. And he also rules global finance or large sums, collections of money, whether they be in the investment realm, the banking realm, the pension realm, the insurance realm, or the tax realm. Pluto is symbolic of all of this, and wherever he goes, he tends to intensify it. And when he reaches the late degrees where he is now, the period that he reaches between about 27 to 29 degrees of Sagittarius, that has coincided when other planets, other important planets, have reached those degrees. They've tended cyclically to coincide with stock market crashes and blow-ups in financial markets. And that's where he is residing right now. Okay. He's been back and forth over that area for about a year. And so that I was able to say this would be the time period when that we would have this. Now, Pluto is about to go into the sign of Capricorn on November 27th of this year.
Capricorn's cautious, isn't it?
Capricorn is the total other extreme. Oh. Capricorn is, I don't want to spend a dime.
I was going to say
I have to be careful because I've run out of everything. Capricorn is the sign of scarcity, of pessimism, you might say, where Sagittarius is out of control pessimism. Capricorn can be out of control. Out of control optimism. Capricorn is kind of out of control pessimism, the absolute other extreme, and often historically appears after giant bubbles and things have taken people off the edge with gambling and chance taking and speculation. Capricorn comes in and says, now you have to pay the piper.
When was the last time there was a configuration like this?
Well, there were two recent periods. The first was the mid-1500s in Europe. This was coinciding with the Protestant Reformation in Europe. Now, this can't be emphasized enough, because when Protestantism challenged Catholicism in Europe at that historic time, the Catholic Church was as powerful an entity as any of the monarchies were in terms of governing people's lives. And when the Protestant Reformation came along, it overturned, in a sense, the power and the influence of the Roman Catholic Church. And it instituted the notion of religious freedom, but it also led to years and years of wars between the Catholics and the Protestants. which we know have played out over a long period of time. But the notion of religious freedom, the next time that Pluto transited Capricorn was at the time of the American Revolution, the beginning of the colonies, deciding we did not want to be under the yoke of Britain, and the forming of our forefathers coming together, our founding fathers coming together and formulating the Declaration of Independence, et cetera, and starting the Revolutionary War. And why? Because a lot of it was about economics, taxation without representation.
But if it was transiting Capricorn, and you said Capricorn is the cautious and draws in, it sounds like it was a bit more volatile than that.
Well, it is, because generally what it symbolizes is a disillusionment with the past, with whoever is in power. They want to break. Pluto breaks up and destroys. So he is in Capricorn, the sign of the establishment, the caution, the whoever the reigning governments are at the time. Pluto comes along and says, we've got to make a huge change here. We're going to have a revolution, or we're going to announce that we're no longer putting up with this. It's because of usually social and economic breakdowns that coincide with this. And another important thing we have to consider is soon Uranus, by 2011, 2012, will be going into Aries. And the last time Uranus transited Aries was in the Great Depression, and it squared Pluto in Cancer. Well, this time in 2012, Uranus, the planet of transformation, technology change, freedom, liberty, and invention, is going to transit Aries and it will square Pluto again in 2012. Now, this suggests to me, once again, that it's not just Pluto alone. Other planets come into play here. That we're going to have, in my estimation, a second American Revolution, where hopefully we're going to talk about getting our democracy back, which has been seriously compromised.
Well, you know what? As an intuitive, I'm listening to that configuration, Uranus and Aries squaring Pluto, and I'm going, well, maybe the heart will have to come back up. Do you see what I mean? It's like
it will. It will eventually, I feel, but at the time, there is going to be a lot of challenge, unfortunately, a lot of pain and prices that will have to be paid, because this is only the beginning of a depression cycle that probably won't bottom out until around 2017, when Uranus and Pluto separate from that square and we have a breather to start to come out on the other side of this.
Well, now, I just want to put in a quote that you have on your Huffington Post blog of September 28, 2007. And she has this wonderful quote, "The end of democracy and the defeat of the American Revolution will occur when government falls into the hands of the lending institutions and moneyed in corporations," by Thomas Jefferson.
Yes, I have that right here in front of me. And if you hadn't brought it up, I was going to read it.
It's so precious, isn't it?
Well, our founding fathers, our country was founded on one wonderful thing, and that was open debate. They all disagreed with one another to either major or minor degrees about how the country, of course, Alexander Hamilton was a man of banking and money and wanted a central bank, and Jefferson was absolutely loathe to have the government in any way controlled by banks or lending institutions and debt. But I think that right now, whichever side you're on, you have to agree with Jefferson that is exactly what happened to us in about the past 25 year period. This started happening where Washington has never been so awash in lobbyist money. Campaigns have to raise huge amounts of money in order to even exist. I think we're going to be radically changing and returning to many of the more democratic principles, taking the big money out of politics. I personally think that eventually probably there will be no money allowed for campaigns. There'll be some kind of government fund to let everybody appear on TV and campaign to a certain extent. No private money will go into campaigns. Now,
That's true in Europe, isn't it? Isn't England like that?
Yes, in England. In other democracies of Europe, there is no campaign finance. There's no, you just run on what you are and what your record is and what you say you are, et cetera. You're given a chance to appear on the media and write editorials and demonstrate, but there is no money involved in campaigns. Now, to give McCain some credit, he did try back in the 1990s, he and Russ Feingold, a wonderful Democrat, the two of them banded together for campaign finance reform. But needless to say, during the Bush years, when they finally voted, it was so watered down, it's practically meaningless now.
Wow.
Everybody is just awash with money at this time. And by the way, I have to express my deep concern about the Republicans and their interference in elections. You know, they're throwing up a smoke screen with this Acorn thing, but the Republicans have really had a history. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. wrote after the last presidential election, did a very thorough research article for Rolling Stone showing how the elections in Ohio and Florida, New Mexico were interfered with, the machines broke down or were reversed, Democratic votes turned Republican, and many of the votes were thrown out. And it's interesting that recently Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Greg Palast together wrote another article in which they're deeply concerned about the election being thrown and the machinery being tampered with.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm bringing this up because there are some aspects on Election Day which point to this. Mars in Scorpio, a kind of detective sign that if there's any sleaze, it's going to come out, squared to Neptune, the planet of deception and disillusion, on that day. And Uranus, the planet of change, is exactly opposite Saturn, the planet of the old guard, on that day. There are major, major conflicts on Election Day, and I want to say to my listening audience, everybody needs to get out on a local level and make sure the actual machinery is working so that your vote counts. This is extremely important, that whoever wins should be the winner, not from something that was manipulated.
Yes, I think the last two elections both were.
I absolutely agree. And the fact that the Supreme Court overrode the Florida Supreme Court, which had ruled in 2000 that the votes should be counted, to me was the beginning of the end of our democracy. And we are in danger. We have many gulags or concentration camps across this country now in which people can be virtually kidnapped by Homeland Security or any of these agents and put away into these places and interrogated without any rights to a trial or a lawyer. And another thing I want to bring up about our democracy being in grave danger right now, which I talk about in my book and frequently in my articles, is that May of 2007, President Bush issued what he called a presidential directive, saying at his discretion he could declare martial law. And that means shutting down the legislature and the judiciary and taking over the country and using our own soldiers to quell the citizenry to take over. this is a very, very terrible thing. And it was only Arianna Huffington on the Huffington Post that interviewed the candidates about what they would do about this, and all of them kind of hemmed and hawed. Obama said this was unconstitutional. Now, you could say, well, Bush is on his way out. This doesn't really not going to make any difference. But recently when Paulson, the secretary, what I'm fond of calling the secretary of the treasury, brought forth this bailout package to the Congress, as you know, they were meeting and everybody looked like they'd been hit by a cyclone when they came out of this meeting, as financial banks are collapsing, Wall Street is collapsing, and Paulson and Bernanke go in the secret meetings and say, you've got to accept our bailout package. And we wondered why. First they didn't pass it, then of course they passed it with a few alterations put in, which basically rewards the top brass of the banks, which hands this money over to the same people that supervised all of this bad lending. And by the way, those same people have budgeted out to the tune of around $70 billion their bonuses and golden parachutes at the end of the year.
How do we get that information?
Well, it's on many, many websites on the Internet, the Huffington Post, commondreams.org, many publications on the Internet are announcing this. Now, a congressman by the name of Sherman, not spelled the same way as my name.
Is it Sherman?
Yes, his name is Congressman Sherman, was the only one that blew the whistle and said point blank that the reason the Congress pushed for the passage of this is that Paulson told them that martial law, that President Bush would declare martial law if they didn't pass this package.
Mm.
And I'm saying this on the air now,
mm-hmm,
that Sherman blew the whistle, so I feel I can quote him. That they said behind the closed doors that if this package wasn't pushed through and passed, that Bush was prepared to declare martial law. So here we have that orchestrated presidential directive where a lot of people say he can't do this, this is unconstitutional. Then that same year, last year, they pushed through another version of the Patriot Act, which actually backed up that presidential directive, giving the president more powers. So all of these things are pointing to our losing our democracy. Now, my take is that Barack Obama is much less likely to make use of these things than John McCain is, and that deeply concerns me. In terms of who we would vote for president.
Do you think astrologically, what we're going to do is take about a 1.5 minute break here. And what I'd like to do is tell everybody we're going to be back very shortly and that you will be taking calls. And what I'd like to ask you when we come back is a little bit of astrological supportive information about, for example, McCain and Obama. But also, you have quite a fund of knowledge about who is trustworthy. I mean, who's really working, like what you said about Warren Buffett? Who's really working for the good of the group here in this country? People are floundering, going, I don't know who to trust, you know?
Right.
So we're going to take a break, if you'll just wait a moment, and I'll tell everybody. This is Veronica Entwistle, and I'm talking to this wonderful, amazing mind and heart of Linda Sherman, who wrote a book called What Next? A Survival Guide to the 21st Century. And Linda's research started off because she was an astrologer, but she really got some amazing material that backs her astrological information about how the collective has moved through various phases of economic evolution or devolution. Or revolution, is that right?
Right.
And after our little break here, we're going to take some callers, but also I'm going to pick Linda's brain and get her to explain where the power really is in certain individuals or in the collective. It's this point. So we'll see you in about a minute and a half. This is Veronica Entwistle. You're listening to Paradigm Shifters. Good afternoon. We're back. We're talking to Linda Sherman about the astrological configurations and the political situation and the economic situation and how our systems are maybe facing the natural end as according to the stars. That's kind of a trite way of putting it. And welcome back, Linda. And I just want to give the number so if people would like to talk to you in person, they can call. That's all right, eh?
And the wonderful.
Number. All right. And the numbers are, if you'd like to talk to Linda yourself or ask her some questions, 877-876-5227, if you're in the States, 877-876-5227. Or if you're calling from Canada, it's 888-810-8322. And then the direct line for people from other planets, 530-8763-222. And Linda would love to chat with you. So would I, but she's going to talk to you about some pretty amazing information. And Linda had some more. You had a grander quote. You can explain what the source was about the...
Yes. There were several releases of information that Representative Brad Sherman had talked about. The imposition of martial law. Now, there's an online newsletter called London Banker Blogspot. There's an article called "We Had to Burn the Village to Save It," and it's written by a British author. And I want to say quote a paragraph here. He says, "There can be no more iniquitous alliance than to have the politicians at the service of the bankers. Unless perhaps it is to have the military at the service of the bankers, too. The U.S. seems to have committed itself to this worst of all possible combinations, with congressmen threatened by the imposition of martial law if they fail to acquiesce to the Paulson plan. Thankfully, the British and EU militaries are too small and ineffective to be leveraged into a similar threat to global or domestic peace and security."
Wow. That was in the London Banker Blogspot?
Yes. It's called londonbanker.blogspot.com.
Wow.
And the title of the article, it was on Friday the 17th, it was published, We Had to Burn the Village to Save It.
Wow, isn't that amazing, hey?
And the whole theme of this is that this approach, the cycle of debt deflation, they say, is just getting rolling, that this whole approach is just wrong. And they compared it to our approach to the Vietnam War. Many years later, Robert McNamara, who was the Secretary of Defense in Kennedy and Johnson administrations, early architect and aggressive propagator of the Vietnam War, said, as you know, a few years ago, we were wrong, terribly wrong. And he thinks that that's what the U.S. approach right now is, that this approach is not going to work. And my take is it just substantiates the cycles I see as an astrologer, the coming Pluto-Uranus square, that we are hit with this economic collapse. And my feeling is, people say to me, this is profoundly pessimistic. I think it's profoundly realistic. That we can't save ourselves or make the changes we need to make if we're living in Never Never Land. And I have to say, I feel that many of us in this country have been living in Never Never Land for a long time.
This is what I was going to ask you, is like, what, that we talk about the numbing or the dumbing of America, how do you explain that astrologically, and are we coming out of it? Is that the solution?
Well, I think, you know, some people would say, well, the body politic has betrayed us, the bankers have betrayed us. To me, the biggest betrayal, this program accepted, PBS accepted, certain truthsayers accepted, has been the mass media. Most of the media, the TV stations and the radio stations, are owned by monopolies.
Right.
And their interest is a corporate interest, to make profits, to push as many commercials as possible, to make as much money. And their effort to dumb down the nation and omit important news has succeeded.
That deregulation that allowed that wasn't that long ago. Was it early 90s? I think.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And they've been pushing for even more deregulation. There was a battle going on about that while Saturn was transiting Leo in 05 and 06. Nothing has been in the news. You notice how certain things are almost completely left out of the news.
You know, I worked in radio years ago, and I'm from Canada, and I was surprised here in this country that the media stopped at the boundaries of the country. And also what went on, the news was the most marketable stuff, not what was going on, you know.
Veronica, you're so astute about this. So many people who are from other nations that come over here and spend some time, people will say to us, the citizens of this country, you don't get any news over here.
You know. Well,
we can't know what's going on.
We might get, we might wake up.
Well, I want to say, I'll give you one example of this. The nation of Israel. Israel is a kingpin in our foreign policy in the Middle East, and we have been a supporter and friend of Israel since it was founded. In fact, the United States being behind that in the UN was behind really the founding of the nation of Israel. We give more to Israel in terms of money than any other nation on the face of the earth. We give a lot. Second, I think it's to Egypt.
Interesting.
Yes. Now, how much have you heard about Israel recently?
Not a lot.
Not practically nothing. There's been nothing about Israel, and yet they're undergoing huge upheavals over there. I talk about Israel's chart often on my site because I think that it is key to the issues in the Middle East, the issues of oil, terrorism, hegemony in the Middle East. It's key to everything, our relationship with Israel and our support of them, and how much do they help us and cooperate with us as well. This is key. And their current prime minister is under indictment. He's leaving. And interestingly enough, there's a new woman that has been voted into that party as their leading candidate. a young woman. I can't pronounce her name. But it's kind of an exciting election process that's going on over there. And this is something that should be, certainly our presidential election is eclipsing other things. And that's understandable on the news. But other things should be reported on that are key. And you're not. So you see, sometimes on PBS, you'll see reports of these things. My favorite journalist is Bill Moyers.
Yes.
And he will talk about these issues and themes that we've discussed this evening. But Israel is extremely important. And yet most people don't even know what's going on over there.
Interesting. Well, I want to go back to, and I agree with you totally. I'm kind of one of these people who, I'm not kind of, I am one of these people who does not study the news, mostly because I didn't want it in my head because I'm a metaphysician. But I'm trying to catch up right now. We have a caller, and I'm glad about that, Linda. So let's take this caller first, and I'll finish my thoughts. Second.
Great.
Good afternoon, or good evening. You're on the air.
Oh, hello, Linda, and hello, Veronica. This is Martha.
Hi, Martha.
Hi. It is very frightening to hear what you're saying, and we have a group of friends here who talk about how the American public don't choose to be educated and how they don't choose to check out different television stations to see the contradictions that come through or even listen to BBC, for that example.
Right.
Linda, so astrologically, do you see the American public really standing up and taking a hold of what the reality is? Do you see some movement in that direction? Because I don't know if we can continue out this much longer.
That's a very, very good question.
Excellent question.
And it leads me also into other things that I want to talk about that are more optimistic. Yes, I think I have a lot of hope that I think that through the pain of the collapse of people losing their jobs, losing their houses, losing their freedom, you know, it seems as if when we lose things and we suffer, that's when we start to get stirred up. And this has been true throughout history, and we're starting to get stirred up. Yes, I believe ultimately in the long run that chances are, see, as astrologers, we only know the themes and how they have historically played out. We never know absolutely what people are going to do with those things. It's like when I do a person's private reading, individual chart, I can say, well, these are the talents you have, these are the conflicts you have. The rest of it is up to you as to how you work with it. And hopefully the more insight you have into what this is, the better decisions you're going to make in working with it. And so we never ultimately know whether many people think America's time is over, we're finished, we're kaput. I don't believe that. I am, I guess, in a minority that feel that America as a whole at first is going to be, everybody is going to survive by paying attention locally. We're going to start out by where is it we live locally? How are we going to pull ourselves together? How are communities going to work together for the greater good? And in my book, I propose that we need to move inland to some place of elevation surrounded by farmland so we can start local organic farming, a very, very good source of these ideas is Michael Pollan. His book, The Omnivore's Dilemma and The Botany of Desire, two recent books that he wrote, he's talking about historically farming and food and how we need to change from the mass farming movement, which is exhausting soil and water, and also oil is needed because that's the next major crisis, the end of the age of fossil fuel. We know it's coming. We all know it's coming. And global climate change. So my feeling in answer to your question is a lot is going to depend on where you are locally. what state, what community you live in, getting together with your neighbors, starting victory gardens, bringing families back together. Again, many people are going to be jobless, so people need to live together in their homes, grow their food healthfully and organically, local, learn to manage water, learn to manage soil, rotation of crops, things of this nature. We've got to basically, at the grassroots, change the way we live. And as we do that, my feeling is we're going to start to get our democracy back, because democracy really begins at the grassroots locally. And most of us have become just totally indifferent to local governance. We don't, myself included, for years, I've been, like most everybody else, very lack of involvement. Who are my representatives and what's going on in the Board of Education and all this local? We're going to go from global to almost ruthlessly local in order to survive and thrive.
And what is the astrological thing about that? What is the planetary relationship about that? Is there?
Well, very similar to the last Great Depression. Again, Uranus will be going into Aries, squared to Pluto, so the crises will be of such a nature that we're going to have to survive where we stand, and we're going to have to transform the way we live. There's going to be breakdowns in the pipelines and in the food lines and everything else. There's going to be severe crises with climate change worldwide, and my feeling is in 2012, there may be major earthquake activity in California, in the Philippines, Malaysia, and Indonesia, those areas, what they call the Ring of Fire in the Pacific. So my feeling is we're going to be, the three big things are the economic failures, the climate change, and volcanic cycles and earthquake cycles we're going into. And the end of the age of oil. So in order to head that off and get our democracy back, we have to change the way we live at the very grassroots. And I think ultimately that will lead us to a more fulfilling life. We'll go back to eating healthfully and growing our food locally and being a steward of the earth. See, ultimately, by the time Pluto gets into Aquarius, by 2024, I think we'll sort of officially be in the Aquarian age, and that we will come back together kind of as a nation, the survivors, the people who did it right on a local level, the states who worked together, the communities who worked together, who people who transformed their economic systems into more egalitarian systems. We'll come back together, the survivors, and be a nation again. And we'll know the meaning of democracy and self-governance, which has to do with personal responsibility and being aware. And my feeling is it's really going to be, there's a biblical saying, the first shall be last and the last shall be first. I think the great big corporations and the big bureaucrats in government, all the bigs, will be reduced to smalls.
Mm-hmm. Now, Linda, if I may interrupt you, looking ahead, because there is positive change. I mean, we just have to accept that life is a big cycle.
Absolutely.
How do we look ahead and prepare our children for this change? Right now, higher education is archaic, preparing them for corporate work, learning about financial investments, commodities. This is all going to go into the wayside.
You're absolutely right. That's going to go into the wastebasket.
How can we orient our youth to look ahead and prepare for what doesn't appear to going to happen in their minds? We have a society of young people who are addicted to commodities, to shopping, to...
Absolutely.
They don't even know where a potato comes from sometimes.
They don't. And preparing them for this change so that they're in the forefront of embracing and being ready to take a lead. How do we do that?
I think that's a wonderful, wonderful question, and it's something I feel personally very passionate about. I think that, first of all, wherever we live, we need to start teaching our children where their food comes from to begin with, just planting a garden in the backyard or getting together with the neighbors and having a community garden and getting the children directly involved in it. Teach them local agriculture, how to have a love and respect for nature, how to plant seeds and get tomatoes that they need from early childhood, from the time they can be out there in the garden with you. That's number one, is local agriculture. And then they start developing a knowledge about the preciousness of the earth and water and working in concert, understanding how nature works, a respect and an awe for life and where we get our food from. I think we have to start there. Secondly, we need to start teaching in the schools basic entrepreneurship.
Yay, instead of, I agree with that.
Instead of making clones for the corporation, which is the Industrial Revolution style of education, which is still there, what we need to do in the public schools, teach the kids how to manage their money, basically, how to start a business. Now, I taught elementary school. That's where my background was. But what I would do today is find out from the children around 6th, 7th grade. You've got to teach basic skills, reading and writing and calculating, the basic skills. But even introduce the idea, what do you love? What are you interested in? By, say, 6th or 7th grade. Say one of the boys is really, he loves soccer, he loves lacrosse or whatever it is. Well, what kind of business? Okay, I like to get into the sports business. Okay, aside from being a sports star, which is only one of your possibilities, what would you do? Well, I would like to sell this stuff. So you teach him how to set up a business in the classroom, how to pay his bills, his taxes, how to buy the equipment, how to market it, how to sell it to the other students there. If one of the women is interested in fashion or whatever and wants to go into that business, well, where does all this come from? How do you make something that you would wear and create it and sew it and sell it to people? And how much money do you have to spend to buy your material? And how much do you have to pay them? In other words, find where that child has a passion and help that child to create a business or a profession out of that passion right in the classroom. Then he understands why he or she is learning mathematics or learning to read and to write and math and everything. It puts their basic skills into a context about which they are motivated to learn.
And we have another caller, Linda.
Good evening.
Hi.
I love this show.
Great.
It's all the visions that I've dreamt all my life. And my question is about the founding of America. Why did the indigenous people astrologically have to be so decimated for this? And are they in the forefront that way of living? Small villages and self-sufficient? That seems like our future, right? Is what they used to live, and yet they got so decimated by the founding of this country. I wonder what you could say about that.
Well, number one, I recommend that you read Jared Diamond, who's somebody I was also going to talk about, in Guns, Germs, and Steel.
I did. I've read that one.
Yes. Yes. So he is really an authority on why, throughout time, there have been empires who defeated other empires and defeated indigenous people. And when the Europeans came over here, both to North and South America, and just devastated. And they also lost very valuable ways of life. in the process.
What was the astrological configuration of that or around that?
Well, I have to say that we're talking great spans of history in which there were men, but interestingly enough, it was in the mid-1500s when Pluto was in Sagittarius and then Capricorn that the Spanish came over and really defeated the Aztecs and
Mayans,
the Inca, and you know, that they did some real devastation to Central and South America indigenous societies that had grand civilizations.
So that was their bubble of kind of increasing.
Exactly. Sagittarius, which rules globalism and travel and everything, brought them over, and then Pluto and Capricorn, their societies collapsed and gave out under the superior weaponry of the Europeans, you know, the kinds of weapons that they had and the means of warfare. But in all cases, most of indigenous people were defeated by disease, by having no immunity to the disease. That's why he talks about germs, guns, germs. That the Indian smallpox and many of the diseases that were brought over here by the Europeans, these people had no natural immunities to these diseases. So that many more people died of disease than even in the wars.
It's like right now where there are processed foods are bringing down an awful lot of native people.
Oh, well, that's the other thing. See, when you industrialize food production, you create monocultures, you create big businesses that determine what you eat, which is economically makes them very rich. Now, I have a section in my book about even how the government in the 1990s got involved in forcing genetically engineered seeds down people's throats, literally, and that laws were made to ensure that these seeds would be patented.
That was amazing.
And I talk about that in my book, and it's been devastating in the nation of India. Farmers who traditionally worked exchanged seeds with each other for hundreds and even thousands of years and kept crops going and did things healthfully, and everything had been just devastated by the forced importation of genetically engineered crops. I think that the industrialization of farming, and it depends really also on fertilizers created from oil, which we're going to eventually run out of. So this is why I say, in answer to this lady's question, I think it was, this is what happened historically, and we lost a great deal when we defeated, I mean, in North America, there were approximately 900 Indian nations that were brought down by the European settlers
and immigrants. And do you see going back to that kind of way of life? Is that a kind of guidance of a way of life for us to look towards?
I think so. In many ways, the Native Americans who had a reverence for the earth,
exactly.
And many of them were nomads, and they did not stay that long in one location. They didn't have an idea that you own land. Ownership of land was foreign to many of these nations. And structure was different. They had a reverence for nature. They had a reverence for everything that was living.
Thing where there's an attunement with a higher authority, a higher power, and an attunement with the land, an attunement with the body, whether it's Native American, you know, no matter who it is, isn't that kind of the route to dealing with the
I believe that. See, I feel that, again, I'm not an authority on Native American society. But I do feel that many of them, their religion and their spirituality was tied in with the way they lived. There wasn't a separation.
Exactly.
And there was a sense, I think what was beautiful, there was a sense of the sacred that was involved.
And it was their
with the earth,
not their doing.
And all living things. In our culture, we've commodified everything. Everything is just a way of making money for somebody. we take the sacredness out of it. We take any kind of consideration of the greater good out of it. It's all about greed and the commodification. Even the labor force has been commodified. That's why so many jobs have been outsourced to cheap labor in other countries. And we had slavery at the beginning of this country, a blot, a horrible blot on our record, because we commodified the labor force. We turned African people into things, into just working clones. And this is what is, I don't think that has to be a structural part of the capitalist system. I think we can have entrepreneurial capitalism without the commodification and the taking the sacred out.
Exactly. Thank you. I'll keep listening and I'll let someone else call.
Thank you for your call.
Thank you. Blessed be.
Blessed be. I would also like to, I think this is a good segue. First of all, your book is called What Next? A Survival Guide to the 21st Century. And your website is Soothsayer, SOOTHESAYER.org.com.
.com, yes. Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I wanted to say is you can't really legislate integrity, can you? And I kind of feel like the pulse is there for people to learn to kind of regroup their integrity. But there are a few people out there in positions of leadership who can give us, you know, some leadership on that level, are there not?
I feel that there are very few people, sad to say, and I think most people would agree with me as well that I'm not making a startling statement here, that are really, really have integrity and trustworthiness.
Truth is only a marketable thing. You can't really believe that.
Anybody in the Senate or the House who's tried to do the right thing has been suppressed or snuffed out or whatever. And I think we're just in one of these cycles. It's happened many times before where we need a clean sweep.
Well, there are those who say that we are the reincarnation of the last days of Atlantis and we're here to make better decisions. What would you say to that?
Well, I'm not, I can't comment on something about which I know nothing. As far as the continent of Atlantis, and but I think the story of Atlantis it represents an archetypal myth of a society which was very advanced in many ways, technologically and literally. Somehow, it did something to blow itself up, that it committed a kind of suicide, which is again the things that Jared Diamond talks about his book Collapse, how societies choose to fail or succeed, like the Easter Islanders or the Maya, who overpopulated and cannibalized themselves, used up all of their resources indiscriminately until they died out. That Atlantis forms a kind of mythic story or tradition that is very relevant to our lives today. Is that what we're going to do? Are we going to commit suicide? Are we going to overconsume and wind up with...
Or live in fear so that our brains are numbed and we don't have any of that integrity or that sense of being connected to the higher or the value or the ability to create a life that's a win-win for us all, you know?
Well, that's what I talk about in the book called New Frameworks of Consciousness. I think that possibly the most significant outcome of the suffering and the losses and the collapses that we face may be an opportunity to change our consciousness, to re-spiritualize ourselves. So we really, I think, my opinion is that we are spirits trying to manifest as humans as opposed to the other way around, that we have to acknowledge what we really are. Mm-hmm. We've become so materialistic that we've lost this sense of spirit and life in us. We've commodified ourselves, in a sense, and dumbed ourselves down. And we have to reclaim what we really, really are. And in that process, there'll be a great transformation and elevation of human consciousness in history, so that many of the problems that we have and challenges will be able, the lights will turn on. We'll be able to see how to solve these problems, because we'll be coming from a place of love and respect and awe instead of disrespect and greed and selfish narcissism. We'll be coming from a whole different level of consciousness, and I think that that is the hope for the future. I think that's where we may be going, that that's where internally we want to go, is to this higher level of awareness.
And isn't that, I mean, isn't Pluto sort of like Scorpio about that? It's like rip it down, rip it apart, and then come back up.
You're exactly right. It's the planet of death, destruction, and rebirth. It's like a volcano erupts and destroys everything in sight, but it forms a rich soil to cultivate a whole new set of plants and animals and biological infrastructure.
Well, we have another caller. How wonderful. You're on the air.
Hi. This is Hina.
Hina?
How are you?
Hello, Hina.
Hi, Linda.
I know this lovely lady.
Oh, good.
Yes. I wanted to, a couple of things. I wanted to first ask you about what you feel about Obama's safety and what kind of transition. And then I also wanted to, because you gave some resource before, and for building communities, and I want to mention there's a wonderful book called The Transition Handbook by Rob Hopkins. And there are also...
Hopkins with a P?
H-O-P.
Okay.
P as in Peter, K-I-N-S. And it goes from oil dependency to local resilience, and a really wonderful book. And this whole transition movement is pretty viral all over the world. So if one would just Google transition towns or transition communities, there's a U.S. Website also. So there's a lot going on.
That's wonderful information. My guides keep saying there are systems in a state of development right now that are fledgling, and, you know, if we're willing to get into those, they're new, and they do operate with a higher level.
I couldn't agree more. And Hina, thank you. I'm going to go out and get this.
Me too. I'm certainly going to Google it.
So my question is, I'm concerned, you know, with all the violence being ratcheted up now, and you know, I know you've talked about a revolution, and we've talked about this a lot, but it's really getting frightening how the right wing is revving up its constituency. And I'm really wondering, and I mentioned two questions. One is about Obama's safety, and two is about a transition into, even if he gets in, how are we going to support and transition Obama?
Yeah. Well, I am unabashedly a fan of Barack Obama. And I really do feel that he's one of these people that appears in these crucial historic times, like Lincoln and Roosevelt, and the people of the hour, you might say. As to his safety, nobody can say for sure. We hope that he will be kept safe. There's always in this country, and we're going to have to deal with this, an extremist. When the economy breaks down and our way of life is trend, many people will not be able, for whatever reason, or they won't make the choice to make this transition that Hopkins writes about and that we're all talking about. Instead, they'll go crazy. There will be people who go crazy and who are violent. We have to face this reality. One of my clients from California, who is a very, very wealthy man and well-positioned in the Democratic Party as well, a very nice man, had said, and he has a lot of contacts, And he said to me that a man came to him recently from Wyoming who's in the arms business and said that this is skyrocketing, that people, families, private individuals are buying guns and rifles and handguns and things all over the place. He said he's getting rich very rapidly by selling arms to these people.
Oh, dear.
This is scary. There is no question about it. There will be probably extreme right-wing types that want a military force, a military government, or form paramilitaries or submilitaries or whatever. This is unfortunate, but probably it's one of the things that we're going to have to face. I can't deny that, but I think the worst thing we could do is be paralyzed by fear and be looking over our shoulders at every turn.
I was just thinking about entrepreneurializing a bunch of lead protective vests. Not lead, but, you know.
Bulletproof
vests, yeah.
Yeah.
We'll start our little market here.
Wow.
Well, there's certainly going to be, as there was in the last Depression, as there was in these other very strenuous times, a lot of fear out there, and many people will move over to the dark side, so to speak. They will not stand up to this challenge and evolve into. They will instead be dominated by fear. There will be those people who do that, and we have to realistically face that. But I think the more that we put out their solutions for people, the more we organize at the local community level to take care of ourselves and look out after each other, the better that's going
to
be.
And
the less
media
of that
too,
will be
too.
Because it comes out of complete collapse when people have nothing and they're starving and their families are starving and they've lost everything and they don't know what hit them. They don't know who did it. That's why I wrote my book, to try to explain how this has happened. But many people really just don't know what hit them. They're not, they haven't availed themselves of information or education in which they have any understanding. This, all they know is that they've lost everything, and they're going to have that kind of reaction. And it is scary, but I think the major thing is not to be brought down by fear, and to work instead on organizing new communities at the grassroots. I don't know what Hopkins is saying, the transition handbook, but I'm sure he's got some wonderful ideas about how we can all do that. One of the ways is the intentional or co-housing community.
Yeah.
Recently, my family and I moved to Ithaca, New York, which is surrounded by organic farms. The Finger Lakes are here for a virtually infinite supply of well-managed water. There's a wonderful spirit of community. Cornell University here is a leader in the environmental and ecological movements and forms an economic and cultural center. And they have a system where a master gardener will come over to your house in the spring and help you put out an organic garden. When we moved in here, they had a wonderful block party for all the neighbors to get together and meet each other. And here there's a very famous eco-village that has been very successful of solar houses on an organic farm in which they govern themselves democratically by consensus. They're using alternative to fossil fuel energies, and they've been highly successful. And in the bibliography of my book, in fact, I write a little paragraph, Liz Walker, who is a co-founder of Eco Village, wrote a book called Eco Village at Ithaca, which talks about all the things that she went through, the painful transitions and times when they didn't know they were going to make it in the building of this co-housing. And this is one of the solutions. Not, I don't think it's the only solution, but one of the things, because it's founded on growing your own food organically, locally, and taking care of yourselves within the context of the group and local democracy.
And this is probably online. I'm moving us ahead because we're going to be out of time. I wonder if you can answer first of all, there's probably a website for that.
Yes.
For Eco Village, yes.
Eco Village at Ithaca.
Okay,
You can Google Ithaca, I-T-H-A-C-A, New York, and then Eco Village, and it will get you right to their website.
Good. Now, I just want to ask you, Hina mentioned it kind of, but if you look at Obama's chart, for example, can you see how his safety... Can you see how it could go, how he could actually become safe? Can you see that in the chart?
That's a very difficult question to answer because there are times that come and go through the course of the year where times where he would tend to be fairly safe and times where there would be a degree of danger, just as there is in anybody's chart.
We have to understand
that in anybody's chart there are times when you're accident prone, or that when I do people's charts for them, I say, you know, get your car serviced, drive carefully during this time, you know, take precautions, so that there are those times. But I think, interestingly enough, that 2010 to 2012 period, which is so difficult historically for us, actually his if he gets elected, he's president at that time, his planetary configurations are in pretty good shape with those transits.
Oh, excellent. And is America's moving,
No, I think America is going to be very conflicted with itself.
And we want
that's
that.
Why I say that there'll be a lot of local attempts. Self-governance and local economies and local businesses for a while, a lot is going to, in fact, there may even be some states that want to secede from the union at times. We're really going through a very difficult time in our history, but I think that we will ultimately come back together as a nation and dust ourselves off. But the government will be changed. We'll definitely change our government. I think by 2017, the Federal Reserve System will be finished.
Okay.
Now, I think it's working toward finishing itself already, which is a cartel of private banks, by the way, that set interest rates. This is not the, except for the chair that's appointed by the President of the United States, it is not really a government entity. These are private banking enterprise, and a lot of people. John Kennedy, for instance, talked about getting rid of the Federal Reserve. I think that because of their inability to do what they were set up for, which was to stabilize banking and economics, they're going to be history between now and 2017.
Wow. You know, and I have to say goodbye, but I'll tell you what. I could sit and listen to you for hours yet, and I'm so delighted I have your book. I really recommend it. This is not just to sell books, but the ideas in this book are going to really strengthen your thinking, people.
Well, it's been a pleasure to be on your show and to talk to these lovely people who called in. And, Veronica, I really appreciate this opportunity.
I loved this show. Well, I loved it. I don't know. It's a challenge, isn't it? But I really appreciate the information and meeting you. You're a wonderful being. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Veronica.
And we'll get everybody to check out soothsayer.com, S-O-O-T-H-E, sayer.com. And thank you very much, Linda.
Thank you.
Now, this is Veronica Entwistle saying, whew, we all got a really strong lesson on getting strong, on getting centered, on being vibrant and creative. Follow your intuition. Learn about intuitive centering. And we talk about this every week on Radiance by Design at some level and sometimes on Paradigm Shifters. But Linda Sherman's information is gold to us, probably more stable than real gold or other kind of gold on the market these days. Now, next week, we have a political person as well, but it's a funny one. Swami Beyondananda is going to be here with you next week on Paradigm Shifters. And he does do a lot of kind of, parodies on the political system. He's pretty funny. He's pretty punny, as he would say. So tune in next week for Paradigm Shifters at 5 o'clock. And Radiance by Design, I don't know what we'll talk about next week, but that's our call-in section, Radiance by Design. You call in and we'll learn meditations together and learn to create a higher frequency energy in our body-mind. And you know what? The ante's up, and we really need to do a higher frequency radiation under all kinds, or radiance, I didn't mean radiation, under all kinds of pressure, and how to dispense with fear, how to learn to create more and more of our reality, and participate in what we are now knowing as the shift. And on Thursday night, I'll be on with Jackie Salvitti and her wonderful channel team on ET healing and explorations in consciousness. And that's at 8 o'clock on Thursday night on BBS Radio. If you'd like a session with me, my name is Veronica Entwistle. I'm an intuitive and energy counselor. We do a lot of energy clearing, find out what your soul journey is all about, and so on. Email me, Veronica, at veronicaentwistle.com, veronica@veronicaentwistle.com. And my phone number is 510-595-5564. And maybe there's someone you want to hear on Paradigm Shifters. Maybe you have feedback about Linda and her wonderful presentation today. Whatever, email me, let me know how you are, what you would like to hear, feedback on the show, and comments, set up a session. And I'd like to say, we all have the ability to send each other much love, many blessings during this time. So good night and many blessings.